This is a London Undone podcast. My name is Catherine Cartwright. These podcasts give you an audible insight into some curious places around London. This series focuses on the historic and at times peculiar City of London churches, their histories, features, associations, and their spiritual lives.
I'm Becky Banfield, and this is St. Botolph Aldgate, and we're here because I love this church. We're right on the edge of the city. This would have been where the city gate, Aldgate, stood. And St. Botolph is kind of like an English St. Christopher. So travellers, as they went in and out of the gate, would pray for their good luck on their journey or safety on their journey to St. Botolph.
Right. So he's like the patron saint of travellers.
Yes. So I'm Laura Jurgensen. I'm rector of St. Botolph's Aldgate. I've been here for just coming up 10 years. There's been a church on this site since before 1109, and the current church is built 1744. And one of the things that this church has stood for here at the gate of the city is all about thresholds and about welcoming people in. So this is a church that traditionally has welcomed people of all kinds, and particularly in the last 40 years, it's been a church which has welcomed everybody, and that included very early on people with people who are LGBT. And a lot of in the 80s, a lot of AIDS funerals were taken here by my predecessor Malcolm Johnson. And so we call ourselves an inclusive church, which means everybody is welcome. And that's inclusive not just in terms of sexuality, but gender, race, nationality, anything really, poverty, disability. So we call ourselves an inclusive church, and by that we don't just mean one thing, we mean everybody is welcome.
I'm Margaret, and I'm a member of the congregation. But they're a mixed group of people. Some are single or couples, mostly from East London. It's always been known as a church where gay and lesbian people are welcomed. So we have a number who've come for that reason. But we also have a lot of families who are connected with the Sir John Cass Primary School, which is just next door.
We're also at the threshold of the city in the East End, and that means that we look west towards all sorts of big insurance companies, law firms, and then East Petticoat Lane Market is in our parish as well. So it's a real parish of diversity, and I love that kind of feeling of being at the gate and having all these different kinds of people. We talk about layers of community. So there are all sorts of, there are people who come in here to the parish to work, and that's all sorts of people from business partners to the cleaners who come in overnight. So we've got those, we've got residents, we've got tourists, we've got all sorts of people, and I love that mix. It's just fantastic and a real privilege to be here.
How big is the congregation?
I suppose 40 or 50 on a Sunday morning, including some children. And then we have two lunchtime services in the week, Tuesday and Thursday. And that draws in mostly people who work in the offices close by.
And what draws you here?
I suppose the people. It's a vibrant community of people, and we support each other.
What is the most special thing about the church, in your opinion?
That's difficult. One is the fact that it's a Georgian church. There aren't so very many, and people always come to see the Wren churches. This is a little bit later. There's been a church here for about 1,000 years. It was a Saxon church. That was considered dangerous and was pulled down. So it wasn't burnt in the fire. The fire didn't actually come out this far. Yeah. So it's a very different style to the Wren churches, which makes it interesting.
Yeah.
And it was built by the same man who built the Mansion House. And actually, if you go into the Mansion House, you can see certain similarities, which is interesting. He was the city architect at
and
the time.
And his name was?
George Dance, the elder.
Yeah. And you say it's a Georgian church. And can you describe it to me? What's makes it Georgian?
It's the height of it and the light and the space that you've got in here. You've got the gallery all the way round. Actually, that used to have, that would have had originally, I think, a solid balustrade, and this was put in a little bit later, this more open one. And a lot of the plaster work is slightly later, from a later refurbishment. Sorry. But all the ceiling, all the patterns on the ceiling are beautiful, all that plaster work. And that's very Georgian. You see the same thing in the Mansion House.
You have pointed out the original plaster work.
Because the plaster work's all in white, it doesn't sort of interfere. I think the Victorians would probably have liked to have painted it all. The Victorians did like to do everything in bright colours. They'd have filled up all the windows with stained glass. I'm surprised it escaped, but yeah. I'm glad it did.
And I've noticed on the wall there's a wood carving.
Yes, that's... King David, surrounded by his instruments because he was a musician. And it came from an older church in Whitechapel that no longer exists. Ah. That often happens as churches are not used anymore, or they've been bombed or whatever. Anything that was saved from them, you'll see in other churches. The piano is also, it's a very new piano, yeah. But it is a superb piano. It came this year, because we have concerts here every week. Different musicians come and play their own instruments, or the piano, or the organ. The organ is magnificent.
Can you show it to me?
Oh, wow. This is the organ. It's absolutely magnificent. It's a Renatus Harris. It's the oldest playable organ, church organ, in the country.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I'm Shanna Hart, and I'm the director of music and organist at St. Botolph without Aldgate.
Tell me about the organ. What's so special about it?
It's very old, basically, as I just mentioned. It's built in possibly 1704, 1705, one of the oldest in the country. Almost certainly the oldest in London, this area in London, and it's got quite a lot of its original pipes. So the sound, I don't know if you heard the sort of the real organy sound, the diapason sound, is very authentic, and it really sounds old, works really well for early music and things like that. So.
What's the difference playing this? I don't mean about the sound, I mean about the feel of it versus playing a more modern organ.
Yeah, so it's very responsive, and for things like Bach and stuff, you can get much more control in the articulation and the sort of the phrasing and the expressiveness of the organ, which, say, with a big cathedral organ, you lose because it's usually electric action, so you don't have that direct connection with the pipes.
How lucky did you feel when you got this job?
Extremely lucky, because before I came here, this was my favourite organ in London, pretty much. So when it came up, I was pretty desperate to get the job.
Has anybody famous played it?
People do definitely come here from quite afar to visit it. And you get the famous organist in the country. Most people have heard of it, and a lot of people have visited it. So the people like Stephen Farr or David Good, I think they've all been to visit it. And I'm sure, because it's been here for so long, it's so old, I think almost certainly organists from, you know, the 1800s and the 1900s would have also played it. So
I've been to many city, all the city churches now, and the organs are quite a lovely feature of the churches. Mm. Do you know what's different about this one? Is there anything different to look at?
It's definitely more Baroque in style, as well as the sound of the organ. Obviously, it is a Baroque organ. I don't know if you noticed the statues with the instruments. And the cherubs are quite a strong feature of organs from that time. It's almost a European influence, which you don't get so much with the big cathedral organs and the more modern organs. And I think the design of it and how it fits in the church is particularly lovely. So.
It seems a bit delicate to me.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because it's been painted as nice.
Goldish, golden
yeah.
brown.
Yeah. There's a warmth to it. It's not so austere like many of them. Mm. Do other organists think you are the luckiest organist in London?
I don't think so, actually, because a lot of people don't like this sort of organ because it's so idiomatic to play. The pedals are a slightly different shape. It's only got 2.5 keyboards, whereas most have 3 or 4 or 2 normal ones that will go together in the way these ones don't. It's really thrilling, I think, that first, when I get here on a Sunday morning, playing the first chord, being reminded of that lovely sound, it just feels right. I don't really know how to put it better than that, but it's especially when it's the right sort of music.
this was the one bit of damage in the wall.
Ah.
The rector slept in the vaults, in with the coffins, and then would come out and put the incendiary bombs out on the roof. There was only one that came through, and it landed there. We have a tablet on the floor to mark where it landed, and it missed the organ.
It literally says May 10th, 11th, 1941.
Yes.
It's a very simple marble plaque. How on earth could it have fallen through and missed the organ?
Perfect, wasn't it?
Yeah.
God was looking after that organ. I think he likes it. This is interesting, and lots of people are divided, and it's the reredos, these three pictures at the back, which are very modern. They're from the 80s. The woman who created them was called Thetis Blacker.
Yeah.
She was actually an extraordinarily well thought of batik artist. She's got work in St George's Chapel and in Durham Cathedral. Very well thought of. When I come in sometimes I think, you know what, I can see that working here. And then other times I think, seriously, do we need modern in this beautiful Georgian church? I don't know. So
And it shows on either side and two angels
with
symbols on them.
That's the Alpha and Omega symbol. It's the beginning and the end.
And in the middle there's like a tree with...
It's the tree of life.
And what looks like a city.
Jerusalem.
Above that is a stained glass window.
It's a stained glass
window. Do you know anything about
it? It's a copy of a Rubens. And it's very dark, isn't it?
I
think there's a building on the other side or a tree or something.
Yeah.
But it stops the light coming through, which is a shame because the glass itself is very dark.
A service takes place here every year and it's going to take place today. Can you tell me what that is and what happens?
So today it's John Cass Founders Day, which John Cass was the alderman of this ward of Portsoken in the 18th century, and he founded in the churchyard here his school, and he also founded some almshouses. He died in the act of signing his will in 1718, which is why in the service you'll see all the children who come wearing red feathers. The Lord Mayor will be wearing a red feather, I will be wearing a red feather, because the idea was that he had a hemorrhage over the quill that he was signing the will with. The kids love that story because it's, of course, bloody and gory and gruesome. Now, I don't think that he did actually have a hemorrhage while signing his will. He didn't die signing his will. He died in his chair drinking a sherry, but I don't think that's quite the same symbolism.
The service today, tell us what's going to happen.
So the children and various people who are involved with the Cass Foundation come and sit in. Then there's a procession that comes over from Jury Street, which is where the Cass Foundation is based. And that is a very colourful procession. The Portsoken Volunteers will be here. They are a militia. They're based on the militia that from the early 19th century, and they look amazing. They really look like they've stepped straight out of the Battle of Waterloo. They're here as forming a guard of honour, so then the Lord Mayor will be part of that. We process in to great fanfares. Then it's a series of hymns and performances by the kids. And the most important thing for me really is we're here to pray. So we remember Sir John Cass, but we also hope that we are people who will live lives of giving and service and all of those things. So,
but do you know any more about John Cass?
So John Cass is... I mean, he's a really interesting character. So he gave a lot of his money to things like schools when there weren't state schools. And so he was clearly wanting to have the kids of Portsoken Ward educated. He was also a politician. He tried to get into Parliament and failed. He tried, I think, three times to become alderman. And it's interesting reading his history because he's almost a saint when we have services. I keep trying to say it's Sir John Cass, not Saint John Cass, not the same. And actually, I think he might have been a bit of an angular character, reading a bit more about him. But we do remember this great philanthropy, which means that we've got fantastic schools. The Cass Foundation now is a large education charity which gives funds to widening participation of people under 30 in Greater London for education. So we work with prisoners, which is fantastic. They give money for breakfast clubs, for example, or scholarships. And they can be really creative in the way that they give their money out.
So little did he know that it was going to grow into such a successful
charity. It is amazing, and I'm fortunate because I sit on the Cass Foundation as a trustee, my role as rector here, And it's amazing to have the contact with education really across London. So from Port Soken Ward, then it has spread, and it is an important educational charity across London now.
This is a ward church.
Right.
The city is divided into wards, and the wards elect the aldermen to the council. And this is the church of Port Soken Ward.
So it's not a parish church then?
It is also a parish church. So people come in to worship on a Sunday, but then there's also the weekly services, and people come from the offices to the services here. St Botolph was very much on an island with very busy roads around it, very difficult to cross, and a little while ago the City Corporation decided to change the road system and turn that into a garden. And the local businesses and the church itself were all involved in the design of the garden so that everyone could make sure it's what they wanted to have out there. And now it's a beautiful space for office workers to come and relax. The children can come out safely. It's made a massive difference. And the church is now not isolated.
This makes a huge difference. It makes the church accessible, really.
Yes, and hopefully we will have a lot more people coming in here and enjoying it, because they'll come to the garden and see the church and step inside.
Yeah, well, actually, as we've been chatting today, I've noticed people have been coming in and out, people in suits, clearly just wanting a bit of peace. What would you say the atmosphere was like of this church?
When you walk into this beautiful space, and it is beautiful, and it's very high and very white and clean, it's a lovely uplifting feeling. I know some people love the little dark churches, and sometimes I love those too, but you step in here and you step into the light.
There's also some solo stops on this organ, which sound quite funny, this one. And a bassoon sounding. Which I think is quite a nice stop. The trumpets are quite spectacular, and there's an echo trumpet as well.
Oh, I love this.
And there's also, I'll just show you this, there's a bizarre thing which has absolutely no use whatsoever that I can find for. This is called a drum stop. And I've absolutely no idea what they would have used it for, and I don't know that anyone does.